All right. Hi, everyone. We're here with Dr. Maya Shetreat, who is a neurologist, herbalist, urban farmer, and author of The Dirt Cure. She's been featured in the New York Times, The Telegraph, NPR, Sky News, and The Dr. Oz Show, along with many more. She's board certified in adult and child neurology, as long as pediatrics. Dr. Maya completed the University of Arizona's fellowship in integrative medicine and has also served on their faculty. She works and studies with indigenous communities and healers all around the world. In her book and her practice, she offers an integrative and spiritual approach to allow patients and followers to move beyond chronic health issues and embrace their best lives physically, mentally, and spiritually. She also founded the Train Institute, where she teaches Train Medicine, an evidence-based certification program for transformational healing. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So I know in The Dirt Cure, you talk about how we are sanitizing our lives and how, you know, we're just using things like antibiotics, hand sanitizer, bleach. How does this impact our health and our terrain?
Well, so, you know, there was this period of time long ago where we had Louis Pasteur, who put forth this germ theory, right? And, you know, so he identified these invisible to the naked eye microbes and said, basically, they are all around us, and sometimes they invade our bodies and grow out of control and make us sick and maybe kill us. And at that time, you know, it really caught on that, you know, this idea that there are these kind of germs laying in wait, and we were kind of these sitting ducks waiting for these germs and microbes to cause problems. And it became such an extreme thing that actually people stopped eating yogurt and sourdough bread because they were considered to be contaminated. But at the same time, there was this competing theory called terrain theory. And it was actually by a colleague of Louis Pasteur called Claude Bernard. And Claude Bernard said that most illnesses and infections came from organisms that live in our bodies, and that it's when our bodies are out of balance that these organisms could grow out of control and cause problems because, you know, basically, It had everything to do with balance. So, you know, what I really started to discover in my work, and then when I went into the scientific literature, and this was obviously many years ago before this was even so relevant and kind of timely, I was seeing that, you know, what we actually need to be healthy is actually to be exposed to many different kinds of microorganisms and not the opposite. And you know, what we learned, and this is we because it isn't just me, but also it's the scientific community, is that our bodies and our immune systems are constantly learning. Our immune systems are very social, and they like to meet and greet lots and lots of different kinds of compounds and foods and organisms and just different things all the time. And it's an education for our immune systems. And when our immune systems are not in contact with all of these different organisms, that's actually when they become very unhealthy. They become kind of paranoid and everything starts to look like an enemy. And that's how we have partly this epidemic of autoimmune disease, allergy, and it even goes so far as to affect learning and the nervous system, both in the developing human and children and in adults.
So when you say like the microbiome, like kind of mentioning how we're impacted by these microbes, can you explain a little bit more about like our microbiome? And it's not just our gut, right? It's the whole, our whole body and all these different species that are living on it and in us, and the effect that they play on our health.
Yeah. So our microbiome is, in most healthy people, would be about 3 to 5 pounds of microscopic organisms, bacteria, viruses, fungi, yeast, parasites. that actually are living in a synchronous way with our bodies. And when I say in and on our body, it's yes, in our entire digestive tract, ear, nose, and throat, in our kind of, in any kind of opening in our body, on our skin, certainly, in women in their vaginas, and there's different microbiomes all throughout the body. So the stomach has its own microbiome, the mouth has a different microbiome, and so on and so forth. So we have this, and it's kind of like many universes, right? Because if you think of a microscopic organism, and then you think of having 3 to 5 pounds of those, we're talking in the billions, right? To actually be able to measure a mass of these organisms. And these organisms are doing everything from helping us to digest food to helping protect us from, different, organisms and toxins that might not be, out for our best interest as a little mini universe or an ecosystem that we are. They help produce, they actually, as their byproducts, are producing vitamins for us that we need in order to be healthy. So there's a tremendous amount, and they're in constant communication with our immune systems and with our nervous systems. And in fact, there's a whole body of evidence now and a whole body of research that pharmaceutical companies are doing on the topic of what's called psychobiotics. And psychobiotics are the next generation of mood medications, like antidepressants or anti-anxieties, but they are microbial, because there is all this research now that shows that certain organisms can affect our mood and our cognition, our ability to think and our ability to feel are influenced by different strains of different organisms. And some cause us more issues or more if we're deficient, particularly, or have too much of one thing growing, so that the beneficial for our brain and for our nervous system and for our mood organisms don't have a good ecosystem to grow in, we can run into certain problems. So this idea of these organisms, where people used to call them germs, and we thought they're kind of our enemies, and that we, in some way need to protect ourselves from them. In fact, people will ask me, they'll say, well, what's the difference between a germ and a microbe? And what I tell them is that a germ is just a pejorative term for microbe, and that what we're really learning is that almost every organism has some benefit to us in some way. Now, that doesn't mean we always experience the organism in a good way, because if there is any way that we're vulnerable, nutritionally vulnerable, or we have, an overload of toxins, or, we don't have a good microbiome that is in balance and is diverse, then we are more vulnerable, and we can look from the outside, because we think that health is really something that is, we think of it as being not sick. So then we're like, well, then we're healthy. But actually, health is something a lot deeper than that. It's very dynamic, and it's an ongoing thing. And it doesn't just have to do with having symptoms, It doesn't just have to do with getting lots of colds, and it doesn't just have to do with, having a diagnosis. It's something more than that, which is to be resilient. And that means that, when we have certain challenges, that we can bounce back well. And that has to do with our microbial diversity, our nutritional density of what we're eating, and our ability to detoxify, which our bodies are actually very good at if we facilitate it in good ways.
Yeah, I think most people tend to hyper-focus when we talk about a microbiome on our gut. But as you mentioned, we have a diverse microbiome all throughout our bodies. I remember reading, years ago of an indigenous population who didn't brush their teeth, and they ate a really, healthy diet, but they had this mucus membrane bacterial membrane surrounding their teeth, and they didn't have any cavities. And I know you work with or you've studied a lot of indigenous populations. What insight from studying those populations would you say that, you know, they're doing right that, you know, we're no longer doing?
Well, that's a long list, but I would say, it's a whole different paradigm, you know? And I would say, so definitely I don't study them. I definitely have been invited in to learn from them and learn about kind of their spiritual and you know, other practices. And in that paradigm, that they live in, there are some basic ideas. You know, in my course in the Terrain Institute, my certification, I teach about the indigenous mind because it's such a different way of looking at the world. But the important part, I think, first and foremost, is they come to the world in a place of reverence to the natural world and a place of gratitude and a place of service. So that's a paradigm shift because, and we could get into all of the benefits that are measurable from being in a state of gratitude. And there is tremendous and very interesting evidence about even how that alone shifts your health, shifts your mental health, shifts your physical health, shifts your emotional health. So just in that one way, you know, there's a huge shift. But if you consider too that there's a, there's a sense of living, if you're living in a synchronous way and in a relationship with the natural world where you are not the dominant force, but you are in relationship. So that's one of the most foundational ideas, is that health and well-being comes from being in good relationship with yourself, with those around you, and with your land, with the land and the earth that you're standing on. And everything else is built from that, you know, and that spiritual health is more upstream, you know, physical health is actually downstream. By the time you have physical health problems, you know, in the communities and with the teachers I've learned from, physical health is like you've really let your spiritual health go, you know, and you're not in good relations. And that is why you're getting all the way to the point that your physical body has to express disease. So what we're talking about is a hugely different paradigm from what we really practice or even consider in this culture, you know, in Western culture, where we are. But I do think that just from the standpoint of looking, you know, you said about, you know, dental health, you know, when we look at the stool, there's a study that looked at the stool of, you know, certain community in the Amazon rainforest in Ecuador. And what they found was that the microbiome in their stool, when they looked at the bacteria and different organisms, was exponentially higher, like absolutely no comparison whatsoever to the kind of microbiome, the diversity and the number of organisms that we would see in the stool of someone who's eating a Western diet, living in a Western world. And of course, you know, considering that, you know, grandparents and parents and we ourselves have gotten antibiotics and been exposed to things like bleach and have, you know, there's a whole variety of different things. And of course, it's not because people in the indigenous communities are all dying of infection every day. That's actually not the case at all, because also they're working with plants, which, by the way, many of the pharmaceuticals that we use are derived from the plants in the rainforest, and that indigenous communities, wherever they are in the world, have used. Pharmaceutical companies actually go and take that knowledge and then, you know, use it. But basically, they're in using plants that don't destroy their microbiome in the same way, just for example.
So you talk a lot about like balance and community and diversity and all of these positive aspects or how they affect us in a positive way. Can you talk about social distancing and how that might be having some effects on our health right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in a really complicated time. And I think that, you know, a lot of the practices that we're being asked to adopt now, you know, whatever they may do in the short term, in the long term, and by that I mean, you know, over weeks or months, I think there's a real concern on many levels about how these practices can actually potentially cause harm. Now, you know, I know this is a really obviously polarizing topic for a lot of people. And for me, I mean, I take it very seriously because a lot of the people who are really bearing the brunt of this situation we're in right now are, you know, people who don't have access to good healthcare, are people who are, you know, potentially living in poverty, are people of color, indigenous people. So for me, I take that very seriously, and I don't just, you know, feel like I can, you know, just say, well, you know, we should all just do whatever we want. And I don't think that, but I do think that what we do know is, number one, we have very, very, very good science showing that vitamin D levels are very important to both the risk of developing, you know, any kind of infection, particularly, you know, even this one, and also the severity, you know, of infection if anyone were to contract it. So that's just one thing, because what are we asking people to do? Stay inside and when they're outside, cover their faces, basically cover almost their entire faces and their hands with gloves. And so those two things are basically the major way that people are actually getting exposed to vitamin D, and it's free, you know, as opposed to taking a supplement. Just for example, another example, as you say, is this idea of not being outdoors, which is one of the major ways that we're exposed to diverse organisms, is through soil and nature and trees and plants and sharing this microbiome of nature. That's like the constant source of organisms that are, you know, incredibly diverse. And, you know, one of the things that I'm often quoted as saying is, in one teaspoon of soil are as many microbes as there are people on the planet. And microbial diversity is really the key. That's what keeps us healthy. It's not just having a lot of organisms, but it's having a lot of diverse organisms. So, and another way that we build that microbiome is actually through other people. You know, through pets, through our family, through our community, there are communal microbiomes. Again, more exposure is more diversity. And of course, what we know is that our immune systems are actually strengthened. As I said at the very beginning, that we have a more resilient terrain, the more your immune system is exposed to lots and lots of different kinds of organisms, the more it actually is resilient and able to confront any insult that comes its way, no matter what that is. So I think we're in a really complicated time right now, because what we're being asked to do may or may not have benefit in the short term, but in the long term, and I think we are looking at something more long term here in terms of policy, and in terms of, you know, even whatever this challenge is, I think it's gonna be harmful if we don't really consider what we have actually very good science on all of these topics. And if we can get out of this fear space, you know, where we can't really look at the science, you know, in an objective way and say, hey, here are these important things that we need to keep in mind. You know what I mean?
Gotcha. Yes. Are there any takeaways or actionable steps that you think the average person should start doing? And I know you talked a lot about, you know, how, you know, upstream, the mindset, our community, how we're interacting with people plays a role. Are there any things that we can do in today's time with the restrictions that we have to really maintain that community? Is there any specific foods that are recommended to really enhance the diversity that we have? Or do the types of products we use, do they affect our diversity? And are there any examples of, you know, steps we can take with how to look at products that we're using?
Yeah, all fantastic questions. And that's a big topic, so I'll kind of tackle it, and whatever I don't get, you'll remind me to include. But, you know, number one thing I think is grow food, grow your own food. And I don't care if you're in an apartment, grow some basil, grow some oregano, you know, grow something in a window. That's just number one, grow food, you know, rip up your lawn and grow some food. I think it's just, you know, I live in New York City. I don't live in the concrete jungle part of New York City, but I do live in New York City, and I'm lucky enough now to have green space, and I keep chickens, and I grow medicinal herbs, and, you know, I grow food, and I preserve some of that food. I certainly do not, you know, have a self-sustaining land here. That's not what's happening. But, you know, what I can say is, from a medicinal standpoint, as an herbalist, I have a lot of the medicine that I need, you know, that I grow myself. And of course, I don't expect everyone to do that, but just starting that growing, first of all, you're going to be out getting sunlight, getting fresh air without a mask, because if you're in your own little space, then you certainly don't have to even take that under, you know, kind of take that into account. You're getting that exposure, you're breathing in and through your hands and little cuts in your hands and through your mouth, you're getting little bits of soil microbiome, just traces of it that are basically in the plant microbiome, and you're sharing that, and all the smells, all of the different benefits of just being connected to the earth, which might sound very, you know, la la and spiritual, but in fact is very, there's a lot of scientific benefits, since some people really seem to need that. I mean, obviously to me, it's common sense, but it isn't for everybody. So that's number one. You know, I think having a pet, I found it really interesting that a lot of people ran right out to shelters, and some shelters were just emptied of pets, which is like pretty amazing. And people really, you know, you share a microbiome with your pet. We know that young children who are exposed to pets early, like dogs, are less likely to develop allergies as they get older because of that diversity of microbiome and unusual different microbiome than what other humans have. So I think that's something really important. I think things like bleach and hand sanitizer, I would just say really soap, straight up regular old soap, like the old fashioned bar of soap is great. I think, you know, washing hands is awesome. I'm a believer in hand washing, you know, but I think things like bleach and bleaching all your surfaces. I mean, we know now that there's been so much kind of misinformation and fear mongering. We know that, you know, initially it was like, oh, this can live for days and days on all different surfaces. And then it turns out, no, it doesn't, you know, that actually, no. And people are still bleaching all their surfaces and dousing themselves in hand sanitizer. A lot of hand sanitizers were actually outlawed, you know, a couple years ago because of triclosan, which is actually incredibly harmful, not just to the microbiome, but to health in all different kinds of ways. And so here we are kind of rushing back to alcohol and hand sanitizer and bleach. And what we know about that is it really damages the microbiome of ourselves, of our home, of our family. So again, I'm big for hand washing. If you're going to do surgery, please, by all means, keep it sterile. You know, I'm all about keeping it sterile and gloves and all the different things. If you're like going to be, you know, breaking barriers like the skin. But if you are just living your regular daily life, getting outside, getting dirty, getting vitamin D, breathing fresh air are all very important when you're inside, keeping your house, you know, basically clean as you would. Washing your hands with soap if you've been out in different places, because that's just kind of a good idea anyway. Talk to your neighbors if they walk by. You know, you don't have to get all up close. You do not have to go hug or shake their hand. I personally am not ready to phase out hugging and handshaking from the world, which I keep hearing that the world is going to change now. Like, I will be hugging people. I don't know about shaking hands, but I hug. So I'll still be doing that. But even, you know, one thing I notice is that when I'm in the woods, which is where I go running, people turn their backs to each other or like walk way out of the way. There's a lot of people are avoiding eye contact. There's no harm to making eye contact with people. Like, let's not forget, especially if you're going to be a person wearing a mask, to make eye contact with other people, wave at them, do things that are friendly, like show each other that you're still part of the same community. And, you know, when you're having online conversations, maybe try to come from, you know, I think the more that people are, you know, writing, like if you're someone who calls people idiots online or, you know, elsewhere, like take a moment to consider maybe that's like, you know, maybe if you're calling people idiots, so other people think you're an idiot too. And maybe like this isn't a great kind of way to be in community and in the world, since we all still have to live together. Maybe we can think of more, compassionate ways of interacting with people that we don't agree with, even if we feel very strongly about whatever we feel, because clearly we have lots of people feeling strongly right now. So, you know, I think that this goes on all levels. It's really a physical thing. It's an emotional thing. And it is a spiritual and a communal thing as well.
Yeah, I know. You talked a lot about mindset, spiritual, and kind of it's a lot of physical ailments, you know, start upstream and start there. And I've know you seem to have done a lot to really shift your mindset, and you've talked about shifting your mindset. Do you feel that, you know, there are any daily rituals they can do to help facilitate this process? Is there anything that you do daily? I can talk about myself. I know I do a daily meditation and my gratitude journal, and I feel like gratitude helps me just, you know, put out better vibes into the world and, have a better connection with other individuals. But is there any steps that you take on a daily basis, or do you think it's more of just a overall shift in mindset that you need to develop?
Well, I think every shift in mindset comes from steps, you know, that are accessible. I don't think that, sometimes we have massive shifts in our mindset, and that often happens in times like this, either individually, like if we lose someone or, you know, a relationship or a job or, you know, or home. I mean, like that, those kinds of shifts, or having, you know, a child, or, you know, things that are dramatic in our lives can cause real mindset shifts without us willingly, you know, really embracing or inviting that. And collectively, I think we're in a huge mindset shift as well. And, for me, I'll just say about that I think that's like, you know, it's sort of like surfing. You know, when you have like a huge shift like this, there's like a wave coming and you can't control the wave. You can't control the ocean. You can't control the force of that. But what you can do is either let it pull you under or kind of ride it. And I think for me, what I, you know, try to do, and I'm not in any way pretending it's easy and that it takes, you know, that it just happens. For some people, I guess it does. And for the rest of us, it takes real work and discipline and practice is, you know, but it's certainly what I do and teach is, you know, when you get thrust out of the normal, you know, and normal doesn't exist and you don't even know exactly how you're going to get back to whatever that normal was, it's a really, really important time to consider whether normal was what was really working for you or for everybody, and how you can intentionally live in a way that, kind of nears a new normal that might be a healthier, more sustainable, happier, you know, and more nourishing kind of normal. So I'll say that because here we are in this time where we are being, we are being thrust out of it. And, you know, I do believe strongly that being in a daily gratitude practice is incredibly important. For me, it's also being in nature every single day. I'm outside. I mean, no matter how bad things are, like I can still see a beautiful sunset. I can still listen to birds singing. I can still, just sit on the ground and feel that. I can still stand in the rain and feel that feeling. You know, there are certain things that are going to happen. There's still going to be a full moon. There's still going to be a new moon. All of these things are there, whether, you know, things feel difficult, whether, you know, things feel like they're falling apart, whether things are wonderful, those things are always happening. So for me, you know, nature really helps me be in that sense of awe, helps me be in a place of gratitude, but certainly there are all kinds of ways people can be in a state of gratitude. I also think creative connection. So being connected to your creative self, which could mean for some people that's baking or cooking. For some people that's, you know, for me, it's making mandalas. You know, I make mandalas and landscapes out of like stones and seeds and things like that. And I have a kit that I made for people that they can buy with a little video to show them how to do that, because I think temporary art is a really beautiful kind of healing practice. But for some people it's painting or, you know, making collages or making music or dancing. Like all of those things, I think also are really important ways to be connected to your own spiritual health, you know? And I think all of that is really, really important. And those are like the first steps, you know? And then for me, you know, it's like each step gets revealed to you, you know? So what it has to do also is to just be present for what's being opened up to you. And we always have choices where, you know, we don't have choices about everything, but we do have choices about opportunities or epiphanies that are revealed to us. And we can either embrace them or turn our back on them or walk away from them. Those are the kinds of things that I think are part of that practice of shifting mindset. It takes courage. It's nice to have a community to support you through that, which is why, you know, in my certification, we have this really beautiful community, because I really ask people to step into a place of courage where they do embrace those kinds of opportunities and epiphanies. And I think, you know, it's so much easier and more joyful to do it when you have like-minded people supporting you through that.
Awesome.
Great. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It was my pleasure.
Yeah, so this has been Dr. Maya Sheetreat, the author of The Dirt Cure and the Train Institute, and Dr. Brent Kaplan, and Dr. Tiffany Kaplan from Kaplan Health Institute and Central Coast Center for Integrative Health.
Yeah, stop it.